It's time to turn to the WUKY Sports page with your host, Keith Elkins, revealing conversations and stories you thought you knew from prominent Kentucky sports figures. Now, here once again is Keith Elkins.
Cisco Bryant is with us today. He played at Kentucky in 1983, 84, and 85, right, for Coach Jerry Claiborne?
Well, yeah, 82, 83, 84, 85.
The freshman year.
Yes.
Then had 29 catches, 482 yards, 6 touchdowns during his UK career. He was an outstanding athlete at Bowling Green High School, where he played football, basketball, baseball, and ran track. Recruited by many schools before deciding on Kentucky, and he has coached at high school, middle school, youth football, and baseball levels, and is currently the assistant head baseball coach at Bryan Station High School, the head coach for football at Crawford Middle School, and coaches in summer baseball, the 15 and under U.S. Prime Kentucky. Cisco Bryant, and we are very glad to have you with us today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Nice having been here. Thank you for the invite.
That's a well-rounded sports career, and perhaps best known as a receiver for Kentucky back in the Jerry Claiborne era in the 80s. But let's go back further than that. Now, you graduated from high school in Bowling Green, but that wasn't where you were born. But tell me about your initial interest in sports, where you were born, and how that all came about.
Okay. Well, actually, on the birth certificate, I was born in Bowling Green, mm-hmm. but we spent a lot of time in Indianapolis.
Okay.
And then I'm Bowling Green through and through. I'm a purple, 100%. So basically what ended up happening is I end up playing many sports, and my biological dad died when I was very young, and so mom didn't let me play football, and I was very blessed. My mother remarried into who I call my dad now, mm-hmm. and he convinced her for me to play football.
And that started the football career, and of course you maintained your interest in other sports as well. And like a lot of people in your generation and further back, it was whatever season you were playing that sport, and you were active just about all year round, weren't you?
It was you got one to another. It's totally different now. I commend kids that can play multiple sports, because the coaches want them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that got me interested in all every sport, because I spend quality time doing it.
And did you have a favorite right away, or did you just enjoy being out there, whatever sports season it was?
That was a great question. It's actually my favorite was baseball. Uh-huh. Baseball was something I worked at hard, but football was that sport that came natural, but I worked at it as well.
Mm-hmm. When did you realize that you could make something special out of this, that this might end up paying for a college education and be a real opportunity at a very high level?
I truly did not realize until my senior year. We were playing a game, and Memphis, at that time it was Memphis State, mm-hmm. came up to me. We just lost a very heartbroken game, and they're talking to me, and I actually was rude, because I'm going, what? And he's talking about me coming and visit the coach at that time. And mm-hmm. And I went, and I wasn't really paying attention. I was like, wow, I didn't realize I was that guy that I see on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so this then began to become real then at that point, I guess, once you had that conversation, and then others, I guess, followed, right?
Right, very much so. And it was actually surreal at that time, because mm-hmm. I just recall it a lot. And it was very humbling, mm-hmm. because you walk into a store and you just play football. I just played.
Yeah.
That's all it was. I was just playing, and I didn't realize I was one of those top guys.
Now, at that time in the early 80s, Kentucky had undergone a coaching change, and Coach Claiborne's first year was 1982, which was your first year here. I mentioned 83, 85, that's when you were playing for the varsity, but you were here and on campus and playing and part of the football program in 82, and that was his first season, a winless season as it turned out, but things began to head in the right direction right away. But let's go with the Kentucky recruitment now and tell me about meeting with Jerry Claiborne or the other Kentucky coaches and what led to that decision.
Well, the decision in the beginning was not Kentucky, and that's a fact. I didn't grow up being a huge Kentucky fan. I was a Hoosier. I was a Western Kentucky fan, and And at that time, it just came. And how it came about, my mom, God rest her soul, was talked to my dad about the other two schools I was considering at that time. And I sort of felt bad that she had to travel that mm-hmm. far. So I communicated with Coach Claiborne and the staff, and we came up here, and then I chose UK.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything about either him or the coaching staff, the guys you'd be working especially closely with, that made a difference, or was it mainly the family angle there?
Well, I be truthfully honest with you, it really wasn't the coaching staff. It was a lot. It had a lot to do with the guys I went on recruiting trips with. They mm-hmm. were coming here from the state of Kentucky, and it was funny. Like Joe Prince and I knew each other from four different schools. Mm-hmm. And so that made a big difference as well, because it was guys that now they don't really go like we did. That this generation doesn't understand. We would go and spend the night and you get to know. And then we all said, let's go to Kentucky. And it was pretty cool.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, the generations became especially important because Cisco's son, Ty, of course, is a very prominent member of the current UK team. We'll talk a little bit about Ty here in just a few minutes, but you've seen the recruitment now in two different generations and can obviously have a firsthand experience on how things have changed. But let's go back to that 1983 season. That was the first year that you saw action, and UK was 6-5-1 in 1983, and that was fine with the fans, because it had been 0-10-1 the year before, so things were obviously headed in the right direction. What do you recall about that team?
Well, piggybacking on the 1982 team, it was a lot of freshmen playing, because at that time, Coach Claiborne dismissed a lot of former players that was under
Kersey,
yeah. Thank you, under Coach Kersey. And so we had a lot of experience as a freshman. And then we come back our sophomore year with juniors and seniors that was already on the squad, and I remember vaguely we were just talking about it, and we played West Virginia in the bowl game, and it was like 12 degrees outside on that Saturday, and mm-hmm. the next day it was sunny and beautiful, but it was grinding. It was very grinding, totally different from high school.
And you carved out the 6-5-1 record, which was a tremendous improvement over the previous year. That must have lifted everybody's spirits and work outlook. I mean, you're putting in the work, but you're seeing the results, too.
Yeah, the results came, and because we were putting a lot of time in it. At that time, you really had to really love the game, because the practices was not a joke. Mm-hmm. And the time you spent in practice and preparing was not even close to what they go through now. It's, you know, they call it child labor laws back then.
Yeah. Yeah, it was different, that's for sure. Jerry Claiborne had played for Bear Bryant back in the 40s. He was highly respected. I mean, like any coach, he's going to have some players who like him a lot and maybe some who like him a little less during the time that you're there. But tell me about your experience with him.
There's not too many that don't like him. Uh-huh. I can go on record to say that he is a blessing of a man, God rest his soul. He really cared about you, mm-hmm. and he knew about you, and it bothered him if you was upset about something, and he tries to figure it out. You didn't understand his strong love at 17, 18, 19, 20, mm-hmm. 21. You didn't. And then all of a sudden you realize he has your best interest in heart. And I tell people all the time that I coach like him. Everybody he's ever touched has a warm feeling for Coach Jerry Claiborne.
Yeah, that does seem to be the consensus, and that's very difficult, I think, for a coach to achieve, because at the time he's got to win football games, you got to play, you got to compete, you got to work hard, but he always seemed, and to those of us who were just observing from outside, he seemed very real. It seemed like who we saw as Jerry Claiborne, that's who you saw. Is that a good observation?
That is on point. He was very neat. They would call that anal in 2025. He wanted you to be that way. Everything had to be structured. Everything was done correctly. Because his favorite saying was the little things. Mm-hmm. And as I became a coach, that was mine, the little things. Anybody can do the big things. Claiborne emphasized over and over about the little things.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the former players will say exactly that. And regardless of how tough he might have to be on you as a coach, that they learned that he did have the best interests at heart. He was, I won't say a unique individual, but there couldn't have been too many like Jerry Claiborne.
Well, I that might be the best word. He was a unique blessing. Mm-hmm. You know, he believed in the GPA grades. If you was there 4 years, you got a college degree. Mm-hmm. He emphasized academics because I remember one time I had to change a class and it was during football practice and he yelled across and told me, "Aren't you supposed to be in class?" Mm-hmm. And that's a fact. He was about the academics.
Well, they also produced some very good football teams, and that 1984 football team was was an excellent team, a 9-3 team. You had a win over Tennessee at Tennessee that year, 17-12, and that unfortunately was the last win over Tennessee for many, many years. It took a lot of Kentucky teams to produce another one, but that was just a really good team all around. Tell me about that group and your impressions as you look back on them.
Well, that was the main characters were a lot of Kentucky kids. You know, Ohio, everybody else was in there, don't get it wrong, but it was a very unique, we were very close as a team. We hung out a lot because we all stayed together and during the season, and it had special players. Oh my gosh, had special players that made plays all the time.
Yeah, there were some really, really talented players on there. The guys who carried the football and caught the football, and those are usually the guys we noticed first. But there were a lot of talented players all over the field, weren't there? Tell me about some of your teammates.
Well, the biggest one that's going to stand out is, of course, the MVP of that. It was Mark Logan out of Lexington Bryan Station High School. We had Mark Higgs out of Orangeboro. Then we had George Adams, you know, out of Lexington. Average Joe Hunter out of Florida. Great. All four of them had outstanding years in the NFL, opportunity to play in the NFL. Bill Ransdell was the quarterback. Worley kicked the last second field goal. You got me going down memory lane now. So we were very talented on both sides of the ball, offensively and defensively. Mo Douglas as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of great players. And you had a good, solid season. Tell me about working with Bill Ransdell, the connection there. And even though Jerry Claiborne was a fairly conservative coach in his outlook, you did get some opportunities. Tell me about how you fit into the things as far as that 84 team is concerned.
Well, I think in general, wide receivers was just eligible to go downfield and block. So we all had a pretty nice bench press. We all could lift. Mm-hmm. And we had to be strong, and Claiborne truly believed in the run. And if you didn't block, you didn't play. Mm-hmm. So people used to say all the time, y'all don't drop too many passes, meaning y'all as in Joker Phillips, Cornell Burbridge, Eric Pitts, and myself, and Lefford. The biggest thing was we know we weren't going to get many passes. It ain't like now.
Yeah.
You know, you caught them. We didn't drop too many of them because not too many was coming. So it was a well-rounded receiving core. We all had different perks, and Claiborne used it.
In terms of playing receiver, you know, you're playing in the Southeastern Conference. Obviously, there's going to be some pretty good defensive players lining up across from you. What, when we talk about a receiver getting separation, and sometimes we hear some complaints about, well, our guys aren't getting separation, they're not getting open, what's the key to developing that? Because sometimes the guy across the field from you is going to be just as athletic as you are. What's the key in being effective?
Well, I think for me it had to be because I was 100% defensive-minded. And I will say this to go to your question, Keith, is the first time my high school coach met my wife, Terry, he said, "Claiborne should have never moved you to receiver because my biggest assets coming out of high school was defensive back, safety. It was not receiver. I just was blessed to play receiver." But the biggest thing, it was we wanted contact because if I contact you, I'm going to push off you and I'm going to get separation. Mm-hmm. And if you watch college, and if you, especially in NFL, their receivers do it all the time. They look for the contact. They don't avoid it. And separation has to do with making contact and separating. Unless you run a 4-2 and they run a 4-6. Mm-hmm. But if you both run in 4-4 or 4-8, if he runs a 4-3, now you can't separate from him. So our biggest thing that we were taught is that we make physical contact, we eat their cushion up right away, and then we get in our route.
Tell me about the dynamic with the defensive backs, because you're seeing this guy a lot as the game progresses. Even if they're not throwing to you a lot, you're seeing him a lot. And I'm sure there's conversation back and forth. Do you remember any particular encounters with some SEC defensive backs and how you handle that as the game goes on?
Well, I think the one was Georgia's defensive back. I ended up catching a touchdown on Georgia, and he made a comment prior to that, because they were beating us pretty good between the hedges. And I caught the ball, and I said something, not a cuss word, but I said something very inappropriate to him about his girlfriend being my girlfriend now.
and that probably goes on throughout the ball game.
Yes, it does. Yes, so, it does.
But it's one of those things where you're just by position, you're just going to be out there. You're going to be seeing that same guy. You're going to be hooking up as opponents there throughout the ball game. So, no doubt that does. Any recollection of the best opponents, the guys that really made it tough for you to get that separation or to get yourself open and could make it a long afternoon?
Well, not putting one person in front of the other, but they're all good. Mm-hmm. I mean, and people hear people say the SEC, those guys are unbelievable. If you don't believe it, just look at NFL. NFL draft SEC players, especially back in the day, even more. Mm-hmm. They're all fast. They all know technique. And when you're a receiver, you have to watch a lot of film. What does he do? Does he set down? Does he roll his hips? Does he backpedal? Because I love DBs that stayed in their backpedal. Because you're not going to outrun me. I can run a 9 flat, but you're not going to outrun me backpedaling.
Right.
And that was the biggest emphasis back then is backpedaling. I never understood that because I'm going to eat your cushion up. Mm-hmm. I'm running straight and you're running backwards. I'm going to give the advantage to the receiver.
We mentioned that 1984 game against Tennessee that was in Knoxville, and Kentucky won it 17-12, and you had an active part in that ball game. Again, of course, you had no way of knowing that it was going to be a long time before Kentucky would beat Tennessee again, but beating them with 100,000 people in the stands, that's got to be pretty satisfying for any visiting team, even though you were on your way to a great season. It wasn't like it was a complete shock that you won the ball game, but still, that had to be a big one, didn't it?
Well, I think not really the 100,000. I think it was just the rivalry of Kentucky and Tennessee, because that got built up, and Claiborne built that up a lot. And I think in when's the last time we beat them? That was the build up. And then when you're on the field, a lot of times you only see what's in front of you. If you're a true focused athlete, they can scream and holler all they want. But if you're focused, you're gonna see the person in front, and your job is to beat him. But it was the build up of Kentucky versus Tennessee.
About the day-to-day work that a receiver puts in, I mean, you're working closely with a position coach at that time. Tell me about your experience there, the coaches that you worked with.
Well, Chip Garber was our first coach, and Chip ended up leaving, and Chip was great. And I can honestly say losing him hurt. I forgot to admit, Jeff Pecoro played at that time, too. Chip was very good at being a receiving coach, and he taught you got to do this on this DB, you got to do this. So he would have you work on that defensive back weakness. So if Joker, Coach Phillips, if he's does this, he'd be like, no, that's not going to work on this guy. That's what made Chip Gardner a very good receiver coach, because a lot of stuff you work on as receiver is fundamentals in your feet. And, you know, how quickly you can get that DB to turn his hips, and then you explode off of it.
And those, again, are the coaches that you're working with day to day. Sometimes we think about your relationship with the head coach, but the position coach, that's the guy you have to work with him, right? I mean, that you have to have a decent relationship with him.
Right. Usually a head coach at a D1, any D1, he really does. I think Coach Saban, the GOAT, if you will, he worked with the DBs a lot. But most head coaches usually stand in the middle of the field and micromanage everything.
Yeah.
And they know everything. They're like they're CEO of a company. Don't think they don't know that custodian didn't mop that floor. Mm-hmm. They do.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's head coaches. That's the real head coach. He knows what everything's going on. He's in every meeting, the linebacker meeting, the defensive back, the receivers, the kicker meeting, the holder meeting. And then when he needs to say something, you listen because he's mastered all of it.
Mm-hmm. And you had an opportunity to be a prominent part of some very good Kentucky teams, and when you look back on your college career, is it with satisfaction? I mean, there are always some things maybe that you wish went differently, but in general, was it a great experience for you?
It was. It was fantastic. I think the biggest experience, you hear people say it all the time, but it is true, is your relationship, because mm-hmm. you don't know what somebody is going to be. And then they find out they're doing this, they're doing that. And I'm fortunate we're going down to Alabama this week to play the War Eagles, Auburn, Tigers, War Eagles. And
the Plainsmen.
The Plainsmen, yeah. And the thing about that, Anthony called me one day. He played running back at Kentucky. He lives in down that way, and he called me, and I didn't talk to him in 4 years, 5 years.
And this is, I'm sorry, whom?
A former Anthony Gardner.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, running back. And it was so cool to talk to him because he know Kentucky's coming down, and he's been watching Ty. And so I'm looking forward to see him. I think that's the biggest thing that I remember about college is still going on in my life. Mm-hmm. Because at halftime, if you walk around to that side, you'll see all the former players standing there. And that's really the only time, because we got lives, we got kids, we got jobs, and we don't see each other.
Yeah, we're recording on October 28th ahead of Kentucky's game against Auburn. We'll talk a little bit about the current Wildcats here in just a few minutes. But you eventually became a coach yourself.
Yeah.
Were you still playing when you thought, I'd like to do this? Or did anybody, you say you coach like Coach Claiborne, but anybody in particular other than him or he himself? Maybe talk about that a little bit as to how they became such an influence for you to be a coach and to coach in such a certain style.
Well, my coaching style was Coach Wilson Sears, who had me at Bowling Green High, who came up this way to Bourbon County after he left Bowling Green, and Coach Claiborne. And then a few other coaches you don't know but you watch. I didn't like kids. This coaching thing came from, I don't know where it came from. And then I sort of started with the YMCA. Started working with young people and young kids and really got into it. And my first coaching job came at Dunbar High School in 92. And I started coaching football and baseball there. And Mike Ben and Chip, he was a baseball coach, and Coach Mann was the football coach. And that's when I first started coaching high school. I did a little Babe Ruth and park and rec football, but that's when I got my shot into high school.
When you began to get into coaching, then were there things that hit you like, oh, I didn't know the coach did this, or I didn't know the coach had to do this? I mean, you obviously knew from a player's point of view some of the coaching duties, but there must have been some things that were new that you had to focus on that maybe you didn't know were going to be ahead of you as a coach. Anything?
Well, what it was is I went to a lot of clinics
mm-hmm.
Because I've never been, I still go. I've never been a coach that think I know it all. You know, if I can pick up something. But the one thing I learned about coaching is you have to be you. And I, like I said, I'm not a cusser. It's not me. I'm Claiborne. Mm-hmm. But I can make my point, trust me. There's a lot of kids out here who can tell you that I can make my point. But I've never been that type of person. You can tell if I'm unhappy. But the thing that I've learned through Jerry Claiborne and Coach Wilson Sears was have your players play hard for you. If you can get your players to play hard for you, then that shows not love, because love is an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
That shows loyalty. And loyalty is what they will show. Like, I love Saban. I don't know how he got these superstars. They had loyalty to him because they would sacrifice for the team's success. And a lot of times you don't get that.
that is something that I think can be overlooked in that it's, yeah, he recruited a lot of great players, but you got to get those guys to buy in once they're there and be able to put aside some individual glory possibly for the good of the team. And that's not a skill that every coach has.
Well, I think the biggest thing is and to be truthfully, and it may rub people the wrong way, you just got to be honest. Mm-hmm. And you don't tell young people what they want to hear. Tell them the truth. It's sort of like if you're dating. If you don't like the young lady, break out with her. Don't lead her on. Okay? Because if you lead her on, she's going to end up hating you. If you break up with her, she's going to be mad at you, and she'll move on. And it's the same thing as coaching. If you tell a young person, this is where you stand, and you're honest with them, they eventually will accept the truth. You know, but if you sugarcoat the truth, they're expecting that candy bar at the end, which they're not going to receive.
You're still coaching a lot of baseball. We talked about your baseball interest when you were growing up, and it's World Series time as we record this. In fact, they played well into the night.
I watched it.
Last night. I did, too. All 18 innings. And you said you had that interest from the very start. What kind of how would you describe yourself as a baseball coach?
Very well. I'm very blessed in baseball, and I'm very fundamentally sound on everything we do, how you receive the ball, how you hand. And that was a big plus with Ty. Mm-hmm. People didn't realize Ty had an opportunity to play at UK baseball, mm-hmm. had an opportunity to make the team. They liked him. But it was going to take up a lot of his time. And he got taught the same thing that I teach my kids that I coach now. Is everything is fundamentals. Everything you do is fast and fundamentals. And people don't understand baseball is the hardest game to play. And if I can say, baseball is hard. Here's the reason. Umpire calls a strike that's by your chin. Strike three. Mm-hmm. There's one out. You sit on the bench. The game is mental. You sit there. Now it's finally 15 minutes later, it's three outs. You go to the defensive side. You see that same pitch that an umpire calls strike three on you called a ball. We're human. We react. Mm-hmm. Now the ball's going to find you because now you're not focused.
Right.
Baseball, to my mind, is the hardest game to play because it is so mental. You got to say it's so got so much downtime. And I was able to coach that into my kids to stay focused. You know, look, you know, move your feet, do something, but stay mentally focused.
Yeah, in my experience in minor league baseball, working with legends, and you see guys who, of course, have been stars in high school or college or maybe both, and they come into professional baseball, and for the first time, they see what the players will later describe as a game of failure. And so you have to deal with that failure. Even the best hitters fail 7 times out of 10 or more these days. And so you have to deal with that failure. And when you see a guy get upset after an 0-for-4 or maybe an 0-for-8 or an 0-for-12, if it drags out that long, the game can eat you up, can't you? Because you got to play just about every day.
Right. And when I end up was being at Dunbar High School, I end up going to Bryan Station for the first time under the legend Steve Chandler. Mm-hmm. Steve Chandler taught me baseball from A to Z. He was big-time baseball player, went to Vandy, played one of the first SEC black guys to play at Vandy and got his degree, his master's there, and went to the league and was a scout for the Yankees for many, many years. And so I quit Dunbar and went over to Bryan Station to learn it. And that's the biggest thing about baseball. is that mental. And that's the reason why what these guys can do in the major leagues is amazing. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the challenge, the fundamental challenge in baseball is that you do play so many times and you got to get right back out there and do it again. Sometimes that's good news and sometimes it's not if you're not going so well, but either way you got to overcome that mental angle or it will tear you apart, and it does happen.
Right. The term in baseball is don't get too high, don't get too low.
Yeah.
Even keel.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing about baseball, and people don't understand it. And I'm going to go back to something you just said, Keith, and that makes sense. And that's the part of going 0-for-4. When Ty played Little League, I want to say his final season as a 12-year-old, and then the next year he's going to be on varsity baseball for Frederick Douglass. Mm-hmm. He was batting .898.
Wow. Well, yeah. It wasn't a game of failure for him, was it?
It wasn't. Hitting home runs, playing in all-star games, hitting the ball. And then when you're an eighth grader going up against a senior or junior, you know, I forget the pitcher for Tate's Creek. Ty was fouling him off. And God, what's that young man's name? It escapes me, his first time. And the young man just got ticked off and threw him a 91-mile fastball inside. Ty swung. The catchers already threw it down the third when he saw it. So that's where you have to adjust. In the other sports, you can adjust a little bit, but baseball puts you on center stage because, you know, he went from that high success to struggling as an eighth grader. But in his mind, he didn't say, "Ooh, I'm an eighth grader." It was him competing.
Well, speaking of Ty, let's talk about his growth as an athlete and then his recruitment and now following in your footsteps as a Wildcat and, of course, making his own way as well as a fine defensive back. But tell me about your coaching him and, of course, you're his dad and combining those experiences as he was growing up and then seeing him become an elite athlete and a Division I player.
Well, I'd say this is a fact. This is 100% fact. He was very, very coachable. He really was. He was a young man at a young age. He didn't play with toys. He watched his little movies, but he always hit a baseball. And the thing about it was, when I started working with him, he always said he wanted more. I mean, no matter what it was, he wanted more. A lot more. We would practice, and our practices was just 3 hours for 45 minutes. But he was like, "Pops, more." Mm-hmm. I'm like, "Ty, we're good. Go climb a tree."
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So when I worked with him, it was intense, but it wasn't overboard. Well, he didn't want to come back to every workout. So we hit off the tee. He'll play a high school football game, come home, practice, hit off the tee without being told because he wanted that success. And because he realized baseball is timing. So coaching him, it was, I think, the greatest compliment I ever got coaching him because he was not one of those son fathers that felt like he was entitled. Mm-hmm. We was at an all-star baseball game when he was 10, and the guy came up. He knew who I was. He said, "Coach Bryant, you coaching this team?" I said, "Yes." And he said, "You got a son out here?" I said, "Yeah, the first baseman." He goes, "Oh, that's your son?" I go, "Yeah. Why?" He goes, "I couldn't tell." Because he would be the first one on the field, the first one off the field. I never had to say anything to him.
And, of course, that's a great way for him to make progress as an athlete. And as he got older, then, of course, you can see that he has a chance, like you, to do something special and go on and be a major college athlete. And so at that point, it seems like I guess it sounds like you were pretty good all along with this. But at some point, if he has a chance to be a major college athlete, then the workouts, the conditioning, the off-season work, all that becomes a little more serious, doesn't it, at some point, because now you really have a chance to make something of yourself.
Yeah, and he wanted it. And I've said that, I said it earlier, and people don't understand that. You can want something, but if you don't go get it. There was many times he would be at Frederick Douglass football, and he'd get done, and we'd throw footballs. We'll work on his feet, or he's at baseball practice, and then we'll go back to the field and hit ground balls, or go to a parking lot and hit ground balls. And he always wanted that because he played short and second base. He always wanted that success, and if he didn't feel like that he worked hard that day, he always wanted me to work him harder. And he would run hills at Crawford after a practice. Just to work on his feet. And he never shied away for whatever he had to do. And that's academics as well.
Well, he and his teammates are going through a pretty difficult season this year, and there's a lot of conversation among fans yeah. and talk about coaching changes and things like that. But you had just experienced the coaching change coming through. Your coach was new at the time, Jerry Claiborne, in 1982, but you went through a winless season, which, of course, could not have been easy, even though they knew it was the new coach getting started with his way. But how do you just kind of circle the wagons as teammates and try to ignore all the outside conversation and continue to work? And how do you think they're handling that at this point?
Well, I think you at this stage and age and time in 2025, you only can control what you can control. And it's easy to say that because I ain't got to go through that. But when I speak to Ty, it's like he said, it's business. Do your job. It's no different if I'm of a company, no different like my thing with Stoops. You know, Coach Stoops is the CEO of his company. He is. He's the CEO of the company. If he's leaving or if he's asked to leave, as of today, he's the CEO of the company. Do your job. Players, do your job. And whatever happens is going to happen with the wheel. That's just life. And what that said is coping with it is, again, if you try to fix something you can't control, it's going to be kind of tough.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to get back to your coaching experience mm-hmm. and ask you what you hope that young people get out of participating in sports at a level where it's competitive. You expect a lot of them, but at the same time, most of them, of course, are not going on to college as athletes and certainly not as professional athletes. But what's the goal for you in what they learn and get out of a sports program that you're coaching?
Well, I can honestly say I've been very blessed. At all the years I've coached, when I see my former players to this day, I promise you, they show me mad love. They will make a comment, well, Coach, I didn't understand why you was pushing me so hard. You didn't care. I give the best example. It's a judge here in Lexington coached him at Dunbar High School, and he's a judge. And he would tell people that Coach Bryant pushed me like I was going to play. He says, I was not going to play if we was winning by 100 or losing by 100. But every drill I got in, he coached me like I was a starter. And I think as a coach, you got to coach kids for their ability. And you don't, even though they're not, maybe not going to help you on a Friday night or a Saturday night or a Sunday, you know, would that be males, older, mm-hmm. Adults. But you still want to coach them the hardest they can get, because once they get up in life, that's a job. And they have to learn to fight through that negative of their job. And so I get a lot of meals. Me and my wife get quite a bit of meals paid for when we're out with former players that will see me and say thank you and come over and hug me and say thank you. And I feel very blessed that I touched their lives that way.
It seems like, just from talking with you, you've still got a ton of energy for it, and that you still enjoy getting out on the field and working with young people and winning some ball games too, right?
Yeah. And I think what it is when I stopped playing football, God told me I was done. I was done. I had no shoulda, coulda, woulda, had no regrets. I knew I was done. I was happy. Other teams started in the NFL, say try out for the arena football. I was gone. I was happy. And right now in coaching, I enjoy coaching. And it's not just staying out there just to stay out there. Anyone, my kids, even my middle school kids at Crawford can tell you, I'm very particular about everything they do and how they do it, on and off the field. And so, yes, I enjoy it tremendously.
All right. Well, thanks very much for doing this today. It's been great talking with you.
You too. Thank you for the invite.
All right.
You've been listening to the WUKY Sports Page with your host, Keith Elkins, an exclusive podcast from 91.3 WUKY, produced at the WUKY studios by Alan Lytle. Our theme music is Peanut Butter and Jam by Illogical Bit, available at soundcloud.com/illogicalbit. Subscribe to the Sports Page through iTunes, Google Play, or at our website, wuky.org.
Thank you.